In this new segment of Advisor Revelations, the DPL team will discuss how to evaluate new solutions and address current challenges and the strategies that can help you grow your firm and AUM.
Welcome, everyone, to the Advisor Revelations podcast. I'm Cameron McCray, Regional Vice President of Member Success here at DPL. And joining me today is John Watson, one of our consultants with over 30 years of experience working with clients, advisors on all things protection strategies. Today, our topic and what we're going to chat about is investing during election years. As the campaigns continue to progress and we continue to hear more and more in the media about the market and trends, and we are here to help break through some of that noise and provide you with some additional information to hopefully arm you with client conversations as we progress through 2024. Before we dive in, I'd like to remind listeners to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite streaming app and connect with our team at dplfp.com. There's plenty of resources there as well for those who like self-learning. With that, John, thanks for being on with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you. Good to be here.
Okay, John, we'll get right into it. So, John, obviously, with your 30-year plus experience, you've went through a lot of these different cycles. In your experience, what do you typically hear from advisors and clients during election years?
Well, even more so than election years, you hear during every cycle in the market, anything that happens. But election years are extremely sensitive to people. Especially in the last few elections, people have very strong beliefs. It seems like the pendulum is swinging very far to the left and very far to the right. And you have a lot of strong emotions that get involved within the elections. And within those emotions, the people that are watching their investments, they tend to let that drive their investment decisions, which it's never good to let emotions drive investment decisions.
That's right. So I think the common theme of emotions, would you say those are emotions of more like fear and anxiety, probably not the greedy type of emotions, if you will?
So Cam, you and I have talked before, and what would you say are the two biggest driving emotions that affect people with their investments?
Fear and greed.
You've got it. Fear and greed. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to dive into a little bit, just to kind of give you a headline, how I'm going to handle this. I'm going to dive a little bit into some trends with elections and just other little things in the market that we see. Next, I'm going to talk about the emotions, right? So which one really rules the roost? Is it fear or is it greed? Are we more greedy or more fearful? For those of you who don't know, there's actually a fear-greed index online that if you Google it, it will pull it up and it will show you from time to time based on what the economy and the market is doing, just are we in fear mode or are we in greed mode? So it's very interesting. It changes very quickly. It really changes on a dime, so to speak.
Awesome. So let's get into some of that history. Okay. What are the trends that we see during election cycles regarding the market?
Sure. So everything that I'm going to point out, obviously, you can get on the web. I'll try to point out where to go find the information, but just remember, Google is your friend. So when it comes down to trends, there's a few trends that are really very predictive in the market. So let me start with some background first and foremost. Let's look at some monthly trends just on a month-by-month basis. So since 1950 in the S&P 500, we've had distinctive months that are good in the market and months that are bad in the market. So if you think about the good months, it's really very interesting and it kind of follows the school year in a way. April and November have been our best months in the market since 1950. The worst month in the market, September, go figure. That's when everybody's kids go back to school. Maybe people pick up their statements, start noticing their investments. Maybe a little bit of the fear kicks in and we get a little bit of selling, and that typically is our worst month. So just so everybody knows, for reference, I did get this off of Putnam's website. The best 2 months, April and November, have averaged about 1.6% in the S&P 500. The worst is September, which is negative 0.4%. Obviously, throughout history, I don't know just if it worked out this way or what, it seems like October is when we have our biggest one-day drops in the market. And those are the ones that we remember more so than what happens in September. So the next thing I want to point out is something that we call the Santa Claus rally. So this is something that happens every year right around Christmas. I was able to find some data from Motley Fool. From 1994 to 2023, the S&P 500 has gained 23 times during the Santa Claus rally period. 18 of those times, the S&P 500 has gained the following year. Of the 6 times the stocks have fallen during that period, they declined in the following year. So it is relatively predictive. And again, you can Google this and find this on Motley Fool. But these are trends that are, you know, somewhat staples in the market. And I'm trying to stick with the more modern markets. I don't want to get back to the 20s and 30s. They're totally different periods in time. So let's come to what we are discussing today, which are election periods. And I'm going to go back starting in 1964. This is the data that I found. There's a really nice article online that Forbes put out a few months ago. And it talks about this in depth. So I do recommend, at least if this interests you, go online, Google the Forbes article, Investing, How Elections Affect Stocks. So since 1964, which was the Lyndon B. Johnson era, the elections, it really had significant impact in the country and the direction. So obviously, everybody's worried about what's going to happen in the future. So to understand how elections impact the market and to help reflect the impact of the market during post-election, of course, there's a caveat that, you know, past performance does not indicate what's going to happen in the future. So who knows what's going to happen going on in the future? But this has been relatively very predictive. So on average, since the Lyndon B. Johnson era, and let's think of all the presidents we've had during that time. We've had Nixon after that. We had Carter. We had Reagan. We had the Bushes. We had Clinton. And then Obama's, and then obviously we just had Trump, and we have our current president that's in place today, Joe Biden. So if you look at the average 12 months prior to the elections, it's a little bit less than average. During that period, we returned about 8.4% on average in the S&P 500. Post-election, 9.3%, which is a little bit above average. So the last negative year we had, and I think this makes sense, it was during 2008 when Obama took office. Prior to that point in time. Remember, we were going through the financial crisis, and that was a very scary time in the market. So talking about fear overtaking everybody, you know, even the best of us, including myself, it got the best of us. Even though we work in the market and we see this on a daily basis, we're human beings too. And Cam, I don't know about you. I mean, just the noise affects me too sometimes. It's hard to keep it out of your ear.
Of course. I think my father has me on speed dial, like I'm watching the S&P every day. Someone close to me is.
Right, right. So, you know, sometimes when it's the worst and everybody's talking about things going, you know, going south, and a lot of times that's the best time to buy. I hate to say it, not the time to sell. So that's why we take emotions out of it, right? The whole idea is to buy low, sell high, not buy high, sell low, repeat until broke. We want to break that cycle. And that's what this is all about.
Right.
So also, let's look at the 12 months after the elections. When was the worst period in time? And this is pretty predictable. So again, this goes to show that maybe the large macro trends of the market overtakes really the election cycle itself, and it doesn't mean as much as what really is going on in the economy. The worst period after an election was our good friend George W. Bush. He was elected in 2000. So that is when we had 9/11. We had a lot of things going on with the economy, the dot-com bust, and the market was down almost 22%, 21.9%, according to Forbes. So let's look at the last election. Let's look at the highly contested election. You couldn't pick up the newspaper, get online, read anything without controversy, controversy, controversy. It's really kind of funny. We get the same two guys running again. So again, we're going to have a lot of controversy. We're going to hit that cycle again. So before the election, before Biden was elected, the market was down 7.5%. After he was elected, and this number actually kind of shocked me as well, we were up 39.9%. But again, let's look at the macro trends. What happened? We were coming into the COVID era. Then we got the presidential change, which was a little hairy also. And then once Biden got in, his administration took over and we kind of figured out where we're going. We figured out not everybody's going to die from COVID. And again, level has prevailed. And then the market's up almost 40%. So if you're afraid of COVID going in, you sold out and you didn't get back in that first year, you would have lost out on a really nice recovery. So again, that's Forbes. But just to go to show that within the election cycle itself, there's always a lot of underlying things that's going on that we don't remember. So the whole idea is that stay fully invested, try to find yourself a happy place. If you need help, with investing and you think you need a crutch to keep you fully invested, that's where DPL comes in. We have a number of products that will help protect your downside or give you a nice fixed rate of return. So you do have some money you can go to that is not in negative territory while you stay fully invested with the remainder of your assets and take the emotions out of your investing.
That's great, John. So in summary, what I heard, there's other macro trends, obviously, that affect the market. During election years, the market returns don't vary that much from what we'll call normal years. And that at the end of the day, the goal is to stick to the financial plan, stay invested. And if those emotions are beginning to affect you or some of your clients, we do have protection strategies here at DPL. So that's where I want to kind of take it next, John. Some of our audience might be very familiar with commission-free annuities and DPL. Others might be curious or interested, but not necessarily know all the ins and outs of annuities. So we'll try to keep it high level. But for those advisors who traditionally, you know, don't utilize annuities, but are being asked of clients and they're trying to get their clients to stay invested, what are some of the key speaking points to kind of bring up that conversation? Or what should our audience be armed with to know about when a client is, you know, calling the advisor and say, hey, I need to move everything to the money market today? How do you see those conversations play out? And on the back end of that, what kind of tips can we give them?
Sure thing. So first and foremost, let me put this out there that I've been marketing annuities for 30 years. I went into a mutual fund company in the new hire class. I was the only one that had an insurance license. So I ended up in the annuity department. And here I am 30 years later, helping out with annuities. So with annuities, there's good, there's bad, there's ugly. So what David P. Lau has done, he has developed a whole series of annuities for the investment channels for advisors that basically do not take commissions on products they sell. So none of our products are loaded. Most of them have no surrender charges. The fees are extremely low, and it's a much better deal for the end users, for the clients. So what I would say is that I'm a huge believer in the market. If you can stick with it and not jump out of the market and not go to cash, then you really do not need an annuity unless you need income or you need tax deferral, something of that nature. Some feature that an annuity can provide you that honestly an investment portfolio cannot, that's guaranteed. So when it comes to protection is what I like to talk about all the time. There's a number of things you can protect. And the two biggest things that you're going to protect with annuities are either your asset, so either from going backwards, from the downside, whatever it may be, or the income that asset is going to produce. So again, I know a lot of our audience are going to be advisors. I really beg you to put this question into your reviews with your clients and ask them, what are we trying to protect? Is it the asset or the income the asset can produce? Because that is going to drive us in two different directions. But let's talk about levels of protection. There's various levels we can go. And keep in mind that with these different levels, you're going to have a protection side and you're also going to have for accumulation and for a rainy day or, you know, pass on to your family, or you're going to have it for income purposes. I will do a caveat on income. If you're in your 50s like I am, it's a perfect time to start looking for income. The earlier you start looking for income and lock in income for your 60s, the less money you have to commit to give yourself more income in the future. So again, general rule of thumb, look at your expenses that are essential. In other words, I need to keep a roof over my head, food on the table, clothes on my back. Those are your essential expenses. Subtract that out from what you're going to have coming in from guaranteed sources of income, whether it be Social Security, pensions, whatever, and whatever that gap is. General rule of thumb from most financial publications, and we do a lot of work with Wade Fowle. His view is that you fill those with guaranteed sources of income. So you don't have to guess about making sure that you always have a place to live and you have something to eat.
I think for our audience that might have never had conversations around protecting an asset or protecting an income, I'd like to dive into both of those kind of storylines and client profiles, if you will. So let's first just talk about protecting the asset, which again, for those of you all not familiar, that's simply providing some sort of downside protection on an investment, which of course annuities are very good at. So John, if you don't mind, client walks in the door, the advisor, we're getting into the conversation. Hey, I'm nervous about this election year. What are you nervous about? Right? I'm nervous about the stock market going down. Are you also nervous about outliving your assets? No, not really. I'm just nervous about, you know, not protecting what I've currently made. I'm really worried about the market volatility. That would obviously take us down more of a asset protection conversation, correct?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So tell the audience what we need to know. And based on this spectrum of different asset protection strategies that are now available to a commission-free RIA firm in the form of the commission-free annuities platform here at DPL.
So let's look at the foundation. Let's look at the most basic first to the more complex. So the most basic way you can do this and you can give yourself a fixed rate of return is through a multi-year guaranteed annuity. These are generally CD-like annuities. What we've noticed is that the returns are better than a certificate of deposit. Also, the big difference is you generally have liquidity. So if you need to solve for minimum distributions or say you need to grab some money and the market's down, you want to take it from that fixed account that has some liquidity to it so that you can meet your everyday needs and not cash in your investments when they're down. Because an investment loss on paper is just that, it's on paper. You do not realize that loss until you actually liquidate some or all of that money in your account. So it's an unrealized loss. So you don't want to realize that loss, so take it from something fixed. So that's the most basic. It's basically a fixed rate account.
Yeah. And John, I think you brought it to my attention. We've had a lot of advisors have success utilizing those for clients who might need to see something that goes up and to the right.
You got it.
What was that term, I believe?
Statement protection.
Statement protection. So if you have clients who are picking up the phone when the markets are down, maybe some sort of fixed rate annuity would benefit them because there's really no volatility. There's not a price movement with that particular asset class. And it is just that simple. It is a fixed rate for a set amount of years and probably for the more conservative type clients. Correct, John?
That is correct. And Cam, let me ask you a question. So what did we see a couple of years ago when bonds and bond funds were down? Because those are supposed to be safe investments and they're supposed to be fixed.
Oh, yeah, of course. We had a lot of advisors telling us, hey, our clients are calling us. Our clients understood this fixed income portfolio or this bond portfolio as their safe money. Well, they're seeing the NAVs of the prices of those bonds go down. What can we do? You can introduce a MYGA. Multi-year guaranteed annuity for that statement risk.
Right. Because when you get your statement, it's principal plus interest.
Awesome.
Yes.
Okay. So that one's very simple. I think the audience can understand a MYGA. It's just essentially a bank CD.
CD alternative.
Yeah. Coming from an insurance carrier. What else is available for maybe someone that might want to take on a little bit more risk or as we kind of move up that spectrum of still conservative, but still being able to provide some sort of return, what other types of strategies can we utilize?
Certainly. So there's two additional levels of downside protection. There, we can have a little bit of market participation based on a number of different indexes. The most common is the S&P 500. So what people can do, they can put money in the market. If the S&P 500 goes from 10,000 to 11,000, that's a 10% gain. These type products generally have a cap at a certain point. Right now, most caps are right around 11 to 12% at the area of this. And if you have the S&P went from 10 to 11, that's a 10% gain. You would get all of that gain. If it went up 20%, you're going to get whatever the cap is. So if the cap is 11%, you're going to get 11%. However, since these are products that control fear and control downside, what happens if the market's down 10 or 11%? You get zero. So you have the chance to at least get double-digit returns, but you also have the knowledge that, hey, if the market goes negative, it turns against us, and we have another Y2K, we have another COVID outbreak, you know that you're protected on the downside.
Heard a lot of advisors and then our DPL consultants talk about these. These are, of course, fixed indexed annuities. I've heard of a lot of firms and consultants discuss them as fixed income alternatives as well.
Yes.
But being able to tie that bond-like investment to an index with a floor and a cap to hopefully, you know, yield more than just whatever traditional bonds are yielding at that point in time, while also having the downside protection.
And what we have found is that with the commission-free products and with the products available to the RIA world, or the consumer can come direct to us and we can help them out as well, the caps and the participation rates are much, much higher. So it's a better deal for the consumer, for the end consumer. So that's why I'm here. I'm not here to get rich off of making commissions off of people, but I try to spread the word as much as possible.
Yeah, spread the good word, John Watson. That's what we like about you. So I think there's one more product type that can fit this asset protection conversation. One that is, I think probably most people are less familiar with, and we're going to be discussing registered index linked annuities or RILAs, which is far and away the fastest growing type of annuity. I think since their inception and probably about a decade now, they've had quarter over quarter growth every quarter. Mm-hmm. Obviously, clients like them, and I think advisors also like them because of their flexibility. So, John, let's discuss that kind of end of the spectrum for a RILA as an asset protection strategy available.
Certainly. So, for the RILAs, think about the old MetLife Shield commercials. So, this is where they really became known to the public. And this is the first time I recognized myself. So, basically, these are buffer annuities, is what they're called. So what the insurance company will do generally is give you a certain percentage of downside protection. So let's just use 10%. If the market's down 7, 8, 9%, the insurance company tells me, hey, we're going to protect your first 10% of your downside. If it goes beyond that, you're responsible for it. So if the market's down 11% and I have a 10% buffer, I only lose 1%. However, here's the big difference between these and the fixed indexed annuities. The fixed indexed annuities will generally have lower caps, where the cap on the buffer annuity, since you're taking on some of the risk, the insurance company does not have to pay for that risk through hedging. You get a larger upside. So your upside might be 13, 14% as opposed to 10, 11%.
Yeah, great. I think of them too, John, is almost comparative to the other product types. Is gives the advisor a little bit more flexibility on the amount of downside protection they want that particular client to have. Now, if you don't mind, give us some situations of how an advisor is introducing this into the portfolio. So what I mean, how are they funding this? If they have a client come to them wanting to talk about protection strategies, are they using assets on the sidelines? Are they taking it from the fixed income portfolio, et cetera? Could you just give us some background on funding strategies for the RILAs?
Sure. So a lot of times, think of what we just talked about as the anchor to your portfolio. So this is going to be kind of your fear side of the portfolio. So how much your mind dwells in the fear section of your portfolio, then generally these type products are good. With the RILAs or the buffer type annuities, these are for people that really are, they do understand the market. They can take downside protection anywhere from 10 to 40%. If you look at a 40% downside on the market, the only time since 1980 we've had where you would have lost money in something like that was during 2008. And if you look at it a week by week, there's only 2 weeks in 08 that you would have lost money. However, I mean, you still would have lost money. But if you're looking at your success rate is up close to 99% on the times that you will either not lose or make money, then it's not a bad option to have in your portfolio to know that, again, statement protection. I'm going to have something that I can rely on that's going to protect my downside.
Great. Thanks for sharing, John. Those are very popular asset protection strategies that a lot of our firms are finding success with, particularly when clients are coming to them with questions around elections, around market volatility. However, there's the other side of the coin that we need to quickly discuss, John, and that's the protecting the income. It's not really a new concept, probably, because people understand Social Security, people understand pensions. But if you do have clients coming to the door worried about longevity, worried about protecting their income, DPL also has solutions that benefit that. So, John, if you don't mind, just kind of give us a similar kind of spectrum of the when and where protecting income is going to be important and which types of solutions we're looking for that.
So, again, what I will say, it's never too early, especially in your 50s, to start protecting yourself in the future for income. So if we're getting big gains in the market, you know, take some of those gains and protect it for future income. It never hurts. Having too much income is never a bad thing. I've never heard anybody turn down more income if you have too much. You can always adjust it in the future and take less if you need to. However, I know you and I have talked about this, that our parents, so, you know, we're kind of the millennial and Gen X generation, but the baby boomers, they generally worked for a company their entire life and they had a pension when they retired. So, and if I remember, Kim, you said your dad had a pension. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So now pensions are almost gone. What pensions are left, insurance companies are buying them out. In fact, Prudential is probably the biggest buyer of pension plans. And Cam, how does Prudential offset all those pensions that they're backing?
I do not know, John. I would love to be enlightened.
You actually told me, I think, if I remember correctly. Anyways, so the insurance companies are able to support the pensions because they also sell life insurance. So it's kind of like the yin to the yang. So they're on both sides of the business, and it really helps them out with funding and supporting pensions. One thing I will say, as we have clients that come in and say, hey, my pension is being transferred and I have a chance to roll it out and I have a figure that I can roll that out, that's a great time to do planning. You know, what's your goals for the money? How much do we need? And then first and foremost, if you do pass away, who is the beneficiary of your pension? Generally, the beneficiary of your pension is your company. So if I've worked for somebody for 30 years and I die, I don't want my money going to the company. I want it going to my family. So you can control that and create your own pension yourself. And there's a number of ways you can do it. So all the products we talked about, whether it's fixed indexed, RILA, and I'll even go one step further, even the variable annuities, I know they get a bad reputation because they're expensive and obviously loaded with fees. However, the ones we market, they are less expensive. They are still kind of heavy on fees, but they're still much less expensive than what you have in the loaded world. All these products will have income components associated with them to where you're going to systematically withdraw your money. Here's the big difference between the way annuities handle income and a pension handles income. Annuities will defer your money and let you systematically withdraw it over time. You can turn it on, you can turn it off, you can take less, you can take more, reduces future income, but you can still take more if you want to. You can stop it. Maybe you get a rich uncle you get an inheritance from, you don't need anymore. You can just stop it and do something different with the money and save the fees. So having the control over the distribution, the stream, whether you want it in your name, you and your spouse's name, if you want level income, or right now, this interest rate environment, I started in this business in the mid 90s. I've not seen rates this good since the late 90s. Rising income is a really good deal right now, especially for people in their 50s and really almost all the way up until the early 70s. Rising income is a really good deal.
Great. So essentially for the income, those clients worried about protecting income, it's essentially the same product types we talked about, just adding some sort of guaranteed income rider that allows them to still have control, but also not have to worry about outliving their money. So I know we are going a little long here, so I am going to wrap us up here, John. I do appreciate your thoughts and your time today, Mr. John Watson. And for the audience, I'd love to just leave us with a couple of bullet points. Obviously, election years tend to cause or invoke a lot of emotions for clients. Those emotions typically are of anxiety and fear. I think what we learned from John is everyone should be able to at least have that conversation with clients of what they're anxious about, what are they worried about, and those protection type conversations. Are you trying to protect the income? Are you trying to protect the asset? And just know that here at DPL, you know, we don't expect RA firms to be an expert on every type of annuity out there. And that's what folks like John are for. We need to lean on his expertise, but be comfortable with having that conversation and know that you have tools in your toolbox via a DPL partnership that can really help you solve for some of those things that clients want and potentially need as to not hurt their financial plan by, you know, making emotional decisions. Again, John, thank you for joining.
Sure. If I could add one thing here at the end, remember for all your clients that they are going to be afraid. So remember from a behavioral finance standpoint, and I've taken a lot of this in college and had a lot of managers that really liked it. Myopic loss aversion is the propensity of losses overtake gains. And then we talked about fear and greed. That ratio is about 2-1. So people are 2 times more worried about losing money than they are worried about gaining money. So remember that. Also, one thing as an advisor you need to know, you want to be the first to bring up any solution to your client. So don't be afraid to bring it up, even if they turn you down, because at some point, if they go outside and go to a rubber chicken dinner where somebody's trying to sell them some really terrible annuity, then they're going to come back to you and ask your opinion. You need to be the first one. It's called pegging from a behavioral finance terminology. So be the first one to bring it up.
Awesome. Good final thoughts, John. And of course, we want to thank all the listeners. Thank you all for joining us today. If you'd like to connect and get more resources around anything we've discussed or have deeper conversations, please visit us at dplfp.com and make sure to subscribe for podcast updates in the future. Thank you all.
Thanks for listening. To hear more advisor revelations, go to dplfp.com and subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming app.